I'm sorry we're getting a little bit of a late start. What we're doing today is of tremendous importance. And again, thank you for being here. There is a practice very dear to our religious tradition. Used to be practiced in worship services and practiced out and about with people that we were friends of or strangers with. The practice is called testimony. Testimony. It is where someone shares his or her own personal experience as it relates to their own life, as it relates to the grace of God, as it relates to struggle, to discovery, to conversion, to new calling. The series that we're in right now is especially important by way of inviting testimony for us to discuss a church's stance and practice relative to LGBTQ people and to do it all in the abstract is a mistaken approach. The realities of actual lives, human experience, makes a great deal of difference in terms of how we talk about the issue, if not about how we register our own choice. So today I'm very happy that a number of people, all of whom are part of this congregation's life, who will be coming and giving, in a way, the testimony of their own experience, their own perspective as gathered from it. We thank you again for being here. The speakers will go in the order that you are listed in the papers you've received, and that means first, Alan and Paula Burton.
Thank you, Paul. It's nice to have this opportunity to talk about something I never dreamed I would be talking about, homosexuality in my family. It's really began with my own family before I ever met Paula. My brother Mark, who's 2 years younger than me, and Brian, that's 6 years younger than me, are both gay. And Mark, it was kind of evident, you know, when he was a preteen, but he never really officially came out, ever. He met his first boyfriend at Georgia Tech and during his master's, and last year he married him. They've been together for 40 years, so it's been really wonderful. But he no longer attends the church. Brian, I mentioned, some of you heard, I got up, you know, a week or two ago and spoke about Brian. Brian is making a video for us. He's in Vegas, and he's going to make a short video that's we're going to share with this group in another week or so. Brian's story is amazing because he's an ordained Southern Baptist minister and actually got asked to leave his church in Dallas once they found out he was gay. Brian has gone on to help hundreds of thousands of people that are destitute, some might call it deplorables, and continues to do that in amazing ways. I am so proud of him. Anthony, our son, who's 31 now, it was kind of evident to us shortly after he was born that he might be gay. And sure enough, he finally came out at 16, and pretty much had to keep it quiet in Bellbrook, Ohio. So he really did not come out to the general public, just to his parents, until he got off to the University of Michigan. Anthony is a fantastic young man. I think he would make a wonderful father someday. But he's really been turned off by the church and the bad things that go along with religion and judgmental attitudes. In Paula's family, she was really close to her cousin Tommy growing up in Chicago, strong Italian Catholics, and Tommy, unfortunately, was ridiculed by his father as he grew up. He's turned away from the church. Even though he's nationally recognized as a speech therapist, he really struggles with addiction and has had a really difficult life. Paula will touch on the fabulous things that are happening under the leadership of President Slissel at the university, which he started a program a couple of years ago. And now every unit on campus, every single unit on campus has a focus on inclusivity and training all of us over there that even though we think we're open-minded, that we all have our own biases, whether they're realized or not. So I think that's a really great thing. Paula?
So when I began my career in healthcare, I was in a meeting and with my mentor who, you know, because we were in leadership roles, we were going to be hiring people, and she said, it's very important that we hire people that can support the community that we serve. And we were in an inner city hospital in Ohio, and so it was, you know, her message was that we have to be representative of that community. So very early on, although growing up, diversity was always embraced in my family, but as Alan said, you know, we all have those sort of unconscious biases. So in my career, it's always been important to me as well. So when Anthony was looking for colleges, you know, we here in Ann Arbor and in our church, I think, too, we are part of the University of Michigan community, whether we want to recognize that or not. As Alan said, their initiative about diversity, equity, inclusion goes across the entire system, so not only at the university but the health system as well. We were all expected to develop programs. Each department needs to have that diversity representation, a very strong focus on diversity and inclusion. So it's, you know, really timely, I think, for First Baptist Church to be able to walk side by side with the University of Michigan as they embark on this, even though, as I said, when Anthony was applying to colleges over 12 years ago, one of the things that attracted him to the University of Michigan was that it was very diverse and, you know, very accepting, and they had, you know, on-campus support and resources for the gay community. And when he came here, he truly did be able to become more of himself. In fact, it was really interesting, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. I asked if he'd met his roommate, and he said he had. I said, what's his name? He said, his name is Tavon. I said, Tavon. He goes, yeah, Mom. He goes, if I wanted a roommate who had a normal name, I would have picked the Ohio State University. So ending with that, I think it would be beautiful if First Baptist Church could open our hearts to what we all know is the right thing to do.
Can you hear me? Because I know I have a soft voice, so let me know if not. I'm Shannon Floyd, and I've been involved here for a while. I came to this church as a sexton and lived above Paul's office, and stuck around, and then met my husband John and got married in this church, and have dedicated Eleanor in this church. So I'm going to mostly read because I also get nervous. But I'm going to speak a little today about how my brother's coming out affected my family, and specifically my sister and my emotional and practical response to it. I'm honestly a little uncomfortable sharing my story today because I fear what I'm going to share will open up people whom I deeply love to criticism and judgment. But here I am, and I'm going to share anyway. So I have an older sister and a younger brother. I have always been very close with both of them, as well as our parents. My brother came out to me as bisexual and pursuing relationships with men a few years ago, and subsequently to my parents and sister and her family. I had already moved on from my evangelical upbringing and was intellectually and spiritually accepting of homosexuality, and in general, a broader, more fluid understanding of sexuality and gender. My parents and sister were not. My parents were dismayed, hurt, and confused, but ultimately have made their decision that love of my brother is paramount. My sister had an even more difficult time with the news, and for a year would have no contact with my brother. And it broke my heart. It broke my heart to see how my sister's rejection hurt my brother, but at the same time, it broke my heart to see my sister sincerely grappling with something new for her and being unable to accept it. It broke my heart that we ended up on different sides of a big issue and now a personal issue. My heart broke for my parents who watched the unusually close family they raised splinter while also struggling with the news and how to move forward. Some people in this situation would choose to simply respond by making a stand and abandoning the relationship with my sister until she came around to their way of thinking. I was unwilling to do that. I have had a lot of time to reflect on what it means to be Christ-like to family members through this, and I keep coming back to empathy. I want to represent a faith that is about dialogue and relationship, not dogma. To me, the gospel is about love above all, and love is not a tidy thing. Love involves risks and hurt, and sometimes it involves still loving someone while you see them hurting someone else you love. I don't know how to talk about the anger and disappointment I felt towards my sister and her rejection of my brother, while at the same time having my heart break, seeing the pain she was feeling as her reality clashed with her beliefs. At the time, my brother needed my love because he was vulnerable and being rejected because he was trying to be true to himself. And my sister needed my love to assure her that I wasn't going to abandon her even if we disagreed. I have been impressed with the grace and forgiveness that my brother has extended on his end of the relationship, and it has inspired me to be more loving and patient with people over these issues. The relationship is tenuously on the mend, but will probably never be the same. When you focus on issues instead of the gospel, you try to simplify really complicated and nuanced things. And my familial relationships are not simple. I really wish they were, but they aren't. So yes, I believe the gospel is about providing a space in the church for my brother as a bisexual Christian. But I believe the gospel is also about providing a space for my sister to grapple with uncomfortable things and for loving and radical acceptance, even if we don't agree. Because I want a faith that is about relationships and not dogma, I'm holding both of these things in my heart and trying to live with the paradox. So I feel really conflicted about this question put to the church. On the one hand, I want to stand up for my brother and others like him. On the other hand, I want to defend my sister from being cast as the new evil one. And I have a question. Do I have to choose between my brother and my sister in my church? Do I have to label one a saint and the other a sinner? And are only saints allowed in our church? Or maybe only certain kinds of sinners? Am I supposed to choose to whom I extend radical acceptance? For many people, the issue of LGBTQ people being judged and excluded by the church is a pain that has touched them personally. And for me, there's my brother. But I have felt an equal pain on the other side. People like my sister are being at least disregarded, if not actively criticized by many. Instead of being accepted, engaged with, loved, and encouraged to grow in their understanding of the word, both the text and the person, they are belittled, shamed into silence, and forgotten. As long as I have been in this church, it has been a welcoming and accepting place of all people, including people of the LGBTQ community. And my brother has felt very comfortable during his time here. I feel that by making an official statement of inclusion, it is difficult to not sit in judgment of Christians who do not have the same sexual ethics or social values that we may have. I am firmly, heart-wrenchingly supportive of my brother's place in the Christian faith. But I am equally vehemently defending of my sister and allowing her to be where she is in her relationship to God. And I hope that the three of us siblings can all learn more about the image of God from each other. So what concerns me about becoming an officially affirming congregation is that it excludes my sister and people like her. By welcoming some, we unfortunately exclude others. It creates a new line in the sand that I'm not sure if I'm comfortable drawing. So I don't have an answer. I don't know how to make an official statement of inclusion of the LGBT community without excluding people with traditional sexual morals. I just know that I'm not willing to choose between my brother and my sister, that I have to live with ambiguity and discomfort and disagreement, and that I'm going to continue to extend love to her in order to maintain relationship and the hopes that she will do the same for me. So this is how this challenge is playing out in my personal life. I live for Christ's gospel above all else, and the gospel is a messy, accepting, upside down, inside out thing, but it's a saving thing above all. And the one thing I know is that Christ is Lord above everything, and I'm not. And that he accepts the people others reject. I know this church is welcoming to my brother. It has been, and it will continue to be, and I am very grateful for that. And I hope it remains a church that is welcoming to my sister.
My name is Heather Entrekin. My husband and I have been members here for about a year and a half. I'm one of those retired pastors. I did not pay much attention to the gay rights issue until I was in my 40s. I thought it didn't really apply to me, and I sort of assumed that this was something people, gender was something people decided about on their own. I was a graduate student at the University of Kansas. This was in the 90s. And I enrolled in a new course that was being offered in the School of Social Work called Love. And this course was all about relationships. And one day in the class, we had a guest speaker, not an academic. She was a mother. And she came to tell the story of her three children. Their first child was a son, the kind of son that she and her husband had always dreamed that they might have. He was tall and handsome and athletic. As a kid, he played with trucks and soldiers and climbed trees. He was captain of the football team. He was president of the school class. He dated the homecoming queen. When he graduated, he married a beautiful young woman, and they began to raise a family. Their second child was a daughter. She was feminine, she was sweet and gentle. From the very beginning, she played with dolls, she loved to get dressed up. She loved to dance, she took ballet, she loved the color pink. She was captain of the cheerleading squad, she was the homecoming queen. And when she graduated, she married her high school sweetheart and they began to raise a family. Their third child was a son, and from the very beginning, he was sweet and gentle. He loved to play with dolls. He loved to dress up. He loved to dance. He loved the color pink. And when he went to school, he didn't have any friends. In fact, he was bullied from elementary school all through high school. And when he graduated and left home, he was not able to find open, healthy relationships to get involved in. And so he found harmful, destructive ones, got involved in drugs, got AIDS, died at the age of 22 with his parents beside his bed. And that was about 6 months before this class. That story moved me deeply. Not only the story, but the courage of that mother to stand in front of a class of 100 college kids in conservative Kansas, and anywhere else she got an invitation to tell it. It changed something inside of me. Shortly after that, one of my dearest friends had felt safe enough to be able to tell me that she was bisexual. And I discovered that I had a whole lot of friends and colleagues and classmates who were gay and whom I loved and cared for very much. I came to understand that gender is not something we decide about. It's a gift that is given to us in all of its wonderful diversity. We don't choose it. What we get to choose is how and whether we will respect and protect and cherish the gift in ourselves and in others.
A little bit taller than everyone else has spoken, sorry. So my name is... I already have a loud voice, so I don't really... So my name is Sam Kidd, and I... Most of you know I grew up in this church, and I've been a member of the church choir for like 6 or 7 years now. So coming out was, without question, the most difficult thing that I've ever had to do in my life. And trust me, with your mother as your choir director, there's a lot of hardships, but... So, for the most of you who haven't had to come out, let me tell you a few of the things that you might not think about when you have to deal with coming out. So, first of all, the most important thing is you have to think about exposing this sensitive part of yourself to other people, and you don't know how they're going to react. You can feel confident in certain ways. You can feel, they're probably going to be okay with this, or they're probably not going to be okay with this, but you never know, and that uncertainty is a pall that hangs over that decision. A couple other things that I came across is that no one tells you how to come out. There's no guidebook. There's no... You can have older gay friends who know, who have done it before, and you can learn from them. But for each individual, it's a different thing. You have different relationships. Your relationships are different. And so for each person, it's a different experience. And there's no set way of doing it. And the other thing that really... came across to me was that you have to do it so many times. So you have to tell your parents, and then you have to tell your roommates, and then you have to tell your other close friends, you have to tell your pastors, and it's just time and time again, you're ripping this band-aid off over and over again, and you're wondering each time, how are they going to respond? How are they going to respond? How are they going to respond? But then when you get to the end, at least in my experience, it's been nothing but a great experience in that I feel like I'm living as a more true version of who I am, and I have been nothing but accepted. But I know that that's not the case for everyone. I grew up white, male, in a liberal bubble of Ann Arbor with a non-discrimination clause since 1971, 81, something like that. The University of Michigan is a very accepting institution. And I know for many people, I've met many people for whom that is not the case. I have met many gay men who don't speak to their parents, who don't feel accepted, I have had to either dissemble that I go to church or make excuses for the fact that I go to church to many, many people who look at you like you're crazy if you say that. And with good reason, considering the amount of hate that has been cast on the LGBT community by Christians and many religions. So even my current boyfriend, he grew up in a conservative Catholic community, and he is not out to his parents, and he is no longer a member of his church community. He calls himself a Catholic, but he doesn't really believe any of it because a large part of what he went to Catholic school, and so he struggled a lot with his identity and feeling accepted and feeling this ostracization from his family that... not knowing what they're going to think and not feeling comfortable telling them, and then seeing me being more open, it's hard on him. I think that this is something that we have an obligation as a congregation to do. I think that we have, for many years, demonstrated a bent towards being social justice oriented church in many fronts, and I think this is a long overdue way that we can affirm the LGBTQ community. I think that if you look at the areas of our society that are continuing to fight this battle, the word Christian has become a word for many people that means homophobic and means sexist and patriarchal. And I think that it is our obligation as a community of faith to make sure that the word Christian does not become a bad word. And so I think that it is our duty to become fully welcoming and affirming the LGBTQ community so that we can reclaim the word Christian, and that we can fully affirm the Christ-like nature of all of God's creation.
Wow, it's hard to follow that. Obviously, this I'm Sam's dad, so this is a personal issue for me, but I'm not really going to talk about that. I'm planning to talk about how I reached my theological position on this topic, which was sometime before it became such a personal issue for me. I wrote this speech, but now it's more like an essay. It seems too formal, so I'll just look at it. But no, so in terms of my evolution theologically on this point, on this topic, it still seems strange to me, but I grew up in a Southern Baptist church, even though this was in Northeastern Ohio, and I used to tell people I was Southern Baptist, and they said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Northern Ohio." But at least the first three pastors, my sister Lori is here, she probably remembers more about this church than I do, were from Texas. You know, so as you would expect, that implied that we were a very fundamentalist church, that we were taught to take the Bible literally. And, you know, I was around 8 years old at the time, and I mean, I like to think I was a bright 8-year-old, but I couldn't really understand that. I now think that it's sort of inherently impossible to take the Bible literally because there's so many layers of translation, interpretation, but I didn't understand that at that time. But it wasn't too long after we joined the church that I started to become, unhappy with some of the teachings that just didn't seem to make fair to me or to make sense to me. I mean, probably one of the first ones was the teaching that anyone who doesn't have a professed personal relationship with Christ is going to hell. And I was like, but that's not fair, because what about all these people in China or Saudi Arabia who grew up in a totally different tradition, and it doesn't seem fair to expect them to be able to make that decision when, I mean, here I am in this Southern Baptist church hearing every week how I need to come up and make a personal profession of faith. So, you know, that was one of the things I remember first kind of pushing back against. And then there was the treatment of women. You know, we had a strong, articulate, well-read mother, and yet we were taught that, you know, women should not lead or teach in church. They couldn't be deacons. And I couldn't reconcile that. I was like, why not? You know, my mother is at least as good on these topics, and it could bring a valuable perspective as my father. So, you know, I could go on, but I think you guys, many of you are familiar with these issues I'm raising. So in the interest of time, I'll skip ahead. So eventually, a few years later, I went to college in the Boston, Massachusetts area, and the churches I was affiliated with there, or got to be active with, were mostly staffed by Harvard and Yale Divinity, either students or graduates. And so they, you know, they kind of affirmed and furthered my progressive leanings, moving me away from my fundamentalist Southern Baptist upbringing. But, you know, thinking back on those times, I can't recall any discussion of the topic of homosexuality or the LGBT community. Of course, this was in the early 80s. Now, in retrospect, I know, you know, there was, you know, that was the beginning of sort of AIDS and Reagan. And I guess I sort of knew about it, but like Heather said, I mean, maybe it was a topic that I just didn't feel like it affected me, or wasn't really that engaged with it. And I don't think I had really made an overt or proactive change in my position on that point of view, despite my general rejection of literal biblical teachings by that time, or taking the Bible literally. So, you know, I'm not especially proud of that, but that's the fact, because I must not have taken a different position, because jumping ahead now to 18 years ago, somewhere around the year 2000, I was a member of the Pastoral Search Committee that eventually brought Paul and Stacy here, something I am proud of. And, you know, before we became aware of Paul and Stacy as possible candidates, we seriously encountered and entertained a highly qualified candidate who was a woman, a lesbian woman in Massachusetts, in a long-term relationship. She was a pastor, and some people on our committee thought we should consider bringing her here as a candidate. And I guess at the time I was like, wait a minute, I don't think a lesbian can be a pastor. I mean, I hadn't thought enough on that issue, hadn't moved beyond my upbringing, at least on that point, I guess. So I recall trying to remember how this went. I was thinking about Ron Gregg. Is Ron here? Hi, Ron. Wow, that's weird. So Ron plays an important part of my story. You might not know that, but one of the things when I was thinking about Ron, I also remembered a class he taught where we were reading something by Marcus Borg, the theologian who died a few years ago. And there was a line that stuck with me, which was something to this effect. Borg said in one of his books, when he's writing about truth, he said, "I don't know if this story happened exactly this way, but I believe that it is true." So that's true. That's what I say about my story here as well. So anyway, sometimes around 2000, we were considering this person, and I think Ron came to me and asked me, you know, would I be supportive of bringing this candidate as a possible pastor for our church? And I said, no, I don't think I could be supportive of that. And Ron said, why not? And I said, well, because she's a lesbian. And he said, well, why do you think that's invalidating or disqualifying? And I said, well, because the Bible says, you know, homosexuality is a sin. And and Ron said, well, I'm not sure are you sure you really know what the Bible says about homosexuality? And I said, I don't know, maybe I'm not. And he said, would you be willing to read a book about it? So, and he recommended this book to me. The book is called What the Bible Really Says About Homosexuality by Daniel Helminiak, who's a Roman Catholic priest. And, you know, it's about a 130-page book. I still have a copy, and I have it on my Kindle. And it kind of goes, it's similar to the talk Paul gave the other day, the excellent talk. It goes through all the verses in the Bible and talks about, you know, the context and when they were written. And I came away from reading that book with the conviction that, no, the Bible doesn't really say anything about committed same-sex relationships. And as I think is somewhat what Paul said the other day as well. From that point, I said, well, I like to think of myself as an open-minded and rational person. So I changed my position to believe that the Bible doesn't say anything about homosexuality or the LGBT community, and that that should not be an important or any part of the decision as to whether someone should be a pastor or take any other role in a Christian church. Of course, beyond that, reviewing what I thought I knew about what the Bible said, I also had long thought that sexual orientation must be primarily a biological or physiological thing. And I always bristled at the fundamentalists I knew who said, well, it's just a sinful lifestyle choice. And I always said, why would anybody choose to be, you know, vilified and excluded? And I also probably obnoxiously would have asked a few people, well, do you remember when you chose to be straight? And so, you know, given this stuff, the biblical review and my own personal leanings, I said, you know, I really felt that it would be totally unfair for God to create people with a same-sex attraction and then require them to be excluded from community and to live a life, unless they chose to live a life of loneliness and celibacy. So during that discussion, 18 years ago, how long is this? Yeah. Anyway, I felt that I made a talk somewhat like this, I think, 18 years ago. So I really haven't changed my theological position on this topic since then. And I feel now that, I mean, we can all regret that we haven't done anything more about this in 18 years, or maybe not as much as we should have, but I think now is the time for us to move forward and take an affirmative stance that we should be fully welcoming and fully affirming of the LGBT community. Thank you.
Okay, I'm Ron Gregg. I want to thank Bob for his introduction. He said some of the things that I was planning to say. But I'm here to share with you my journey with my son, David, who grew up in this church, who was baptized eventually in this church, and who is currently an American Baptist minister. David, I have always thought of as being a golden boy. When he was very young, he had this great blonde hair and blue eyes, and it looked to me like he should have been in the cast of Sound of Music. And he turned out to be pretty bright, and he did well in school, made a lot of friends, and it was at that time that I began to see that he was particularly sensitive to people and able to be open to most everybody, and I admired that in him. And when he was ready to go to college, he got accepted by two of the leading universities in the country. And during his time at college, he not only did well academically, but he made friends with Peter Gomes, who was a noted American Baptist preacher and writer and theologian. And he sang in the men's glee club, and he directed a production of Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. And I remember we went to visit him there to see that, and it was great. So he graduated from, when he graduated from college, he came back to Ann Arbor for a year where he was getting a master's degree in English literature. It was during that time that he announced to us one day that he was rooming with a gay person. And I thought, boy, this is another example of how open and sensitive he is and so on. The bigger meaning of that message just went right over my head, and I never even thought about it. And I'm sure it was very frustrating to him, because a couple days later, he actually came out and said that he was gay, and this time there was no mistaken meaning in it. So I remember I did not panic. In fact, I didn't know what that meant. And being an overly educated person, I needed to know what that meant. So I needed to read some books. And one of them was the one that Bob talked about. And I was focused on two things. Is homosexuality a choice that someone sort of makes because they think it's cool? Or is it part of your character? Is it part of either hormonal or genetic or some way that you are? The believers would say that this is the way God made you, and who's to stand in the way of God? So I became convinced that this was not a choice, but it was a part of who he was. And secondly, I too looked carefully at what the Bible had to say about homosexuality and what the messages in the Bible were, and I came to two conclusions. One is the Bible says a lot of things about human behavior and how you should act, and we choose the ones we want to abide by, and we don't choose the ones we don't want to abide by. And if you just look at divorce as well as homosexuality, divorce is pretty roundly looked down upon in the New Testament. And yet, the church never is faced with the, at least our churches are not faced with the idea of whether divorced people can get married in the church again, or whether a divorced person can be a pastor. So that's something we essentially, you know, go along with. So why? What's the difference between homosexuality and an issue like that? So I decided that I really supported David and who he was, and that I was proud to be his dad. And then after that, he said he was going to become a preacher, and he was going to go to the Divinity School of Chicago. And I thought, well, for being as smart as he is, that's not a very smart decision. The church was beginning to be in turmoil. And as soon as David graduated, he had a job at an Evanston church. And the American Baptist Church blew up, was in great turmoil. A number of churches had to change their affiliation from one region to another, because the people in some of those regions did not want to associate with them. And this lasted, this was in the early 90s, and it lasted maybe 6 or 7 years. And then things sort of calmed down after that. Not that anything's been finally agreed upon, but everybody agreed not to talk about it so much anymore. David was in the middle of that because for several of those years, he was the president of the Association of Welcoming and Affirming Baptists. And I remember going to two biennials where they were strong and really confronting the established church on the issue of inclusion of homosexuals. So the other thing I want to say is that it's not all been good. There were times that David needed a job. He needed to move from one church to another. And there were churches that refused to consider him because of his sexual preferences. And I was sad. I was profoundly sad for him, but I was also very sad for the churches because they would never get a chance to experience his kind of Christianity, which I thought was quite good. I thought his kind was good. On the other hand, he was also being recognized for leadership positions at both the region and the national level. So the road was not uniformly good or bad, but it was bumpy and disappointing along the way, and this is in our church, in our denomination. And so I think this is a very timely issue that we have brought up. I did want to say that in 2012, the American Baptist denomination decided that they needed to update their manual on polity and practice, which is a sort of like a book that tries to describe all the main beliefs, core beliefs of American Baptists and how they're organized. And it needed to be updated because in part of the upheaval in the church over the prior decade. And one of the areas was the tension between local church autonomy and relational interdependence. And so they needed to have an editor, and here's what they said. Originally published in 62 and revised in 1991, this practical volume has long been an invaluable resource to clergy, laity, and seminarians alike. For the 50th anniversary of the classic text, editor David Gregg brings his insights as a theologian, pastor, polity instructor, and member of the general board. They forgot to mention that he brought his insights as a gay man as well. I am still proud to be his dad.
There we go. Perfect. Sounds better. It's hard. I was first introduced to First Baptist Church 4 years ago through Marissa Alanis. As our friendship developed through serving as leaders for a student organization here, she told me of her spring break plans that year. Installing water filters in a remote village in rural Nicaragua alongside First Baptist and Amos Health and Hope. Having always desired to do international mission work, I asked Marissa if there might be a spot for me as well to serve on the trip. Before I knew it, in February of 2015, I boarded a plane to travel over 3,500 miles from the comfort of Ann Arbor to rural Nicaragua with 12 strangers from this church. Little did I know then, but that happened to be one of the best decisions that I had made in my life. My faith journey, and the reason this conversation is so important to me, is multifaceted, to say the least. I was born and raised in the Catholic Church. I was baptized as an infant, attended Catholic school from kindergarten through 12th grade, and went to Mass Sunday with my family each week until I came to the University of Michigan as an undergrad. Instilled in me by my parents, my faith and my faith community have not always been, or have always been, not only important to me, but also an essential part of my human identity. I have always looked to my faith community for guidance, for strength, and for courage in living out my life as a Christian man. As a practicing Catholic, I was heavily involved in my church community. I participated in our weekly liturgy services. I attended weekly youth group. I served on mission trips and was a leader for multiple religious retreats in both high school and grade school. My involvement in my Catholic faith was a huge part of who I was and how I spent my time. From a young age, through my schooling and participation in my church, I knew of the Catholic Church's teaching on homosexuality. Objectively, the Catechism of the Catholic Church, a text which contains the church teachings, names homosexual acts as intrinsically immoral and contrary to natural law. It names homosexual tendencies as objectively disordered. The Catechism goes on further to say that although the particular inclination of the homosexual person is not a sin, it is more or less a strong tendency ordered towards an intrinsic moral evil, and thus the inclination itself must be seen as an objective disorder. The Catholic Church does not celebrate or recognize same-sex marriages, and additionally, while there's no official policy regarding transgender individuals in the Catechism, the Church teaches that birth anatomy and gender are the same. While I do strongly believe that there is a significant gap between the views of practicing Catholics on this subject and the policies enacted by the Catholic Church leadership, the Church's teachings nevertheless remain strong and direct, and therefore, to me, have been hurtful and harmful. The reason for this pain is because my collegiate years have been a great time of self-discovery. My experiences at the University of Michigan with a diverse set of peers have helped me to understand myself in a way that I never imagined. I've learned to lean on my strengths, recognize and improve upon my weaknesses, and then developed a stronger sense of what I want out of my life. As well as, I have embraced my role as a son, as a sibling, as a partner, as a friend, and as a child of God. Like many others, my faith has also undergone a transformation during this time. Free of the structure that I was accustomed to before college, I examined what I wanted my faith to look like as an adult. I've discerned how I will incorporate how I've been raised into what I want for my future in terms of my faith. Unfortunately, for a long while, those two stood in stark contrast. From a young age, I was aware of my differences from those around me. However, it was not until the latter half of my collegiate career that I understood how society viewed those differences. I'm a gay man. In beginning to understand this identity, I felt incredible, deeply rooted pain in regard to its ramifications for my faith identity. I felt pain in the fact that the tradition in which I was raised would see my love as immoral. For example, I was to bring someone I love to my church community. I'm incredibly saddened to know that the institution to which was such a huge part of my faith formation would reject me for being authentic in the way that God created me. I have felt intense regret in not sharing who I am to those that I love the most because my religious identity teaches that that is an inclination that should be seen as an objective disorder. Upon these painful experiences, thoughts, and feelings, my faith began to fall apart. I didn't know how I could recover from religion rejecting me for something that I simply could not change about myself. For the better part of 3 years, I stopped going to church, I stopped praying, and I began to think that I would no longer have a relationship with God, a church, or anything. It was an incredibly challenging time in my life. However, through time and acceptance of myself, and an incredibly refreshing trip to Tierra Blanca, Nicaragua, and through this church, I found a way to embrace both my faith and who I am as a person. While it has taken me a long time to get to this point, and I still have a ways to go, I'm proud of myself, and I'm proud of my gay Christian identity. I believe God calls all of us to be authentic, to be the true version of how he created us each to be. And I'm proud to be living that truth openly now. I'm also proud to be living that truth as an active participant in this church. This past fall, finally comfortable with my identity and wanting to share that with those closest to me, I came out to my friends and family. Some of the first people that I came out to were members of this church. When coming out, I was welcomed and affirmed with love and acceptance beyond what I thought possible. Never in my life have I felt more embraced, more loved, and more supported by community than I do with this church. I'm incredibly thankful for you accepting me with open arms for who I truly am. If I have learned anything throughout this coming out process, it's that everyone's experiences and understanding their identity are different. I personally was fortunate enough to not need a statement from this church to know that I would be accepted, but many members of my community do. I know that we as LGBTQ individuals truly never know, as Sam noted, how we will be treated until we hear a positive statement of affirmation from someone that they will treat us with the dignity for who we are as individuals, including those who we love. Desmond Tutu, a South African archbishop, theologian, and civil rights activist, once said, "If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor." I would love to see this church community take the necessary step to show anyone who might be considering walking through those doors that they would be greeted with the same love, kindness, and acceptance that I have also received. Thank you.
I'm Bill Foster. My family and I have been members of this congregation for 16 years. And we moved here from the Toledo area for me to do work in healthcare chaplaincy. But I'd like to add more context to a story that I'd like to tell you. I was raised as a Southerner in the Southern Baptist Church, not exactly a hotbed of liberalism. I'm pretty sure that before I went to college, I never knew of anyone who identified as gay. Looking back at that time and in that place, I'm quite sure that any such good folk would never have dared to be so open, nor was I prepared to understand what that meant and what that was about. But I left home eventually. I've lived in a lot of different places, including overseas. And as I mentioned, I've been in healthcare chaplaincy for 35 years. I've seen a lot of things. And I've learned some things, I think, from my experience. And one of them is that most of the things that I learned to fear about the differences in people, and maybe you can relate to me about this, are mostly based on ignorance. And so with that context, I would tell you this story. About a year ago, I was involved in hiring a colleague. I was looking for someone to help replace a position to work with me in the clinical training of ministers and of chaplains. So that's a difficult position to fill, and so I was thrilled and really excited to have someone who was new to the field who came highly recommended. And we set up an initial interview, which was a video conference interview. Right off the bat, she said, "I have something to share with you about myself, and then I've got an important question to ask you." She said, "You need to know that I'm married to a woman." And as you might guess, we identify as gay. She didn't use the term lesbian, she used the term gay. And she said, "We've been together for 17 years. We've been foster parents for many of those years, and a few years ago, we adopted 3 of our foster children. So we are a family of 5. Now, you're hiring for this position in a Catholic health system? I need to know now, is this going to be a problem? Because if this is going to be a problem, we don't need to go any further with this interview." I thought, wow, if she can be this empowered and in charge of herself and this clear, I think I want to hire her already. So no, of course, it was not a problem for me. And I told her I did not think it would be a problem for our health system, but I would check. And as it turns out, it was not. We were hiring her to do a job for which she was well qualified, highly recommended, that was not in any way resting on her sexual orientation or her marital status. And had we not hired her, because of her sexual orientation or her marital status, that would have been a problem. Certainly an ethical problem, and in most cases, a legal problem. So, we hired her. And a couple of months later, she and her family drove to our area to do some house hunting, and Beth and I invited everyone over to the backyard for a cookout. And what a delightful family. As we met and visited and spent more time together, we learned we had so much in common with them. Like us, we're a clergy couple. Both of them were professionally trained in ministry and were clergy. Like us, both of them were from the South. Like us, both of them were former Southern Baptists who, for reasons we could understand and reasons we could relate to, could not feel as at home in the denomination that they once were a part of. The more they talked, and the more I got to know their kids, today aged 11, 9, and 7, and I kept thinking about Zan's wonderful work with the children, I thought, they would love our church, and our church would really love these folks. And so I just blurted out at some point, you got to come visit our church. And for the first time, it got a little quiet. And they looked at each other, and then my colleague spoke up and said, well, you know, we've looked at your website, and it looks really cool, and you really look welcoming, and, you know, we'd really love to come, but we couldn't find anywhere where you clearly say that you're affirming. And, you know, we had this problem in St. Louis where I train, where, you know, Sarah was teaching in a Catholic school, and our kids attended that school, and a real problem came up, and we just can't risk joining a congregation where our kids could be hurt again like that, let alone us. I was speechless. What could I say? I made some comments about, I really feel like we're affirming, and then I realized that's really not enough. And so I told them, sadly, I understood. And I let it drop, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. And so I prayed about it. Beth and I talked a good bit about it. And ultimately, I wrote Paul and Stacy. My thinking was and is that if we can't be not only welcoming, but affirming and fully including of someone like my colleague, her wife, and their family, where they feel safe to be fully who they are, then we need to change. And I hope we will.
Thank you to all of you who spoke and shared your hearts and your stories. Such a vulnerable thing to have done. We're grateful that you were willing to share what you have shared. A great variety of experiences and perspectives, and a lot for us to think about and pray about and talk about. We're technically past time. We started past time also. We were going to open up for any questions. I don't know. It's like 3 minutes of questions, or just, did I hear a suggestion?
I'm just saying if anybody has a question.
Does anyone, one or two people, have a question that, what? Or comment in response to any of these testimonies? This isn't our last chance to have a conversation also, so.
I guess one thing I think, you know, we're focusing on how can we be as welcoming as possible to members of the LGBTQ+ community, but if you could include.
I'm just thinking about our focus is so much on wanting to be as welcoming, as thoroughly, wholeheartedly welcoming as we can possibly be to the LGBTQ plus community. But if we, the plus could include those Shannon described, Shannon's sister, and those who are don't have a letter yet. But you know, what would that look like? I mean, how could the statement or the practice really be clear that all are welcome and nobody's judged? Or...
Thank you.
I'm Lori Kidd. I'm Bob's sister and Sam's proud aunt. And I just wanted to say, I live in Ohio, and so whenever I come, it's about a 3-hour drive. And I am actually, I go to two churches in Ohio, a Methodist church and a fundamental evangelical church. And I have some conflicts, honestly, that are kind of internally challenging for me. They're difficult for me to resolve. I love the people in the evangelical, well, the Methodist church too. I mean, they're not exactly welcoming and affirming either. I love them. I recognize all their goodness. I recognize their beliefs and how much they believe them. And I don't really want to deny them those beliefs, but how much I love this church and you people. And what I see in this church as being such a beautiful thing, it makes me wish I was a Michigander. and so I just wanted to say, I understand, I was raised Southern Baptist too, and I understand the background and growing up when, if people were gay, who knew? We never thought about it. We never considered if anybody was. You know, and then it was all of a sudden, it seemed everywhere. And for some of us, that's hard to grapple with. You know, we're still kind of trying to grapple with that. But my gosh, we're all people. We're all more fully human than we're not, someone said. I say that in my psych class, because why don't we look at how we're alike and how we just all need to love each other? But anyway, I thank you for being here with you all. I thank you for considering this important question, and just God bless this church.
And I don't
Thank you. There may be, I think we have to cut it off. Yeah, so 2 weeks from today, we'll be having a town hall meeting, so there will be more opportunity for comments and questions and dialogue. And a draft of the statement will be available that day. So we still then have a few weeks following that to make edits or take input and so forth. Anything else, Paul, that needs to be said before? Okay, I want to close this with a word of prayer. Let's pray. Loving God, thank you for this time that we've had together to listen deeply, to open our hearts and our minds to the various experiences and insights that have been shared. Thank you for each person who has been willing to share their testimony. We've heard so much pain and pride and joy and love and struggle, and we have experienced your spirit in our midst, in the midst of all of that. We pray your blessings on this process, on our conversation, on our congregation, and on our own individual wrestlings with all of this. Help us in everything we do to strive to be faithful to you and to the way of Christ. In Jesus' name, amen.